This episode of Linux Action Show is brought to you by GoDaddy.com.
And by Ting.com. Head over to last.ting.com and save $25 off your first device.
Welcome to the Linux Action Show, Season 26, Episode 9. My name is Chris.
My name is Matt.
Welcome back, Matt.
I'm back.
Good morning to you.
Morning.
Should I tell folks about the big show?
I'm excited to hear about the big show.
All right, coming up, it is the second part of our wrap-up from Linux Fest Northwest. We've got interviews from the floor. We've cherry-picked some of our favorites. And then, of course, in the news segment, we're talking about Left 4 Dead and Portal coming to Linux and the new release of Debian Plus. A little bit more than that. And then we've got a great feedback segment. We're going to answer some questions. We're going to... we'll address a few maybe things people have picked out about the show that we need to talk about. Somebody's called us to task, Matt. We'll address that.
Okay.
And in the Etsy segment, we have something really neat for the community, especially anyone out there who's ever kind of had an idea to maybe do a one-off podcast or try a podcast, but just wants to make it as easy as possible and reach an audience. The Etsy segment might be just for you. So heck of a show.
Sweet.
Heck
Good
of
stuff.
A show.
Big show.
Big show. Big show. Should we start with the picks?
Let's hear the picks.
All right, Matt, the first pick this week is the Runs Linux, and this came from Vihel Lass in the subreddit.
Yes.
Vihel Lass. University of Tokyo's Robotics Laboratory
Runs Linux.
I love that. I was looking at this in the show notes, and it was just like, this was cool.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, there was so many multiple levels of cool here. I was trying to address... You know, it's like it runs Linux, and that's cool, but there's robots.
There's
that was
robots.
Kind of a bigger thing with me.
You know what stands out?
And it cooks, apparently.
Is there just... See, this is a these are stills from a BBC documentary or piece that was being run on this. And what stands out to me is how I keep seeing a trend a lot. And I don't know if it's just maybe because I'm sure everybody that watches actually or listens does this, but... I'm seeing, like, you watch a conference. I'm watching a lot of conferences on YouTube, and, like, computers in the background are running Unity and Ubuntu.
Right.
You know, you're looking here. These computers here, these are just – it's not, like – it's not the fact that they're running Ubuntu is a big deal. It's, like – it's just – Well, we needed a computer and...
How commonplace it's become.
Yeah, it's just becoming like, well, we're not going to run Windows, so we're just going to run Ubuntu. And I'm surprised how many of these I'm spotting in the wild these days that are running Unity, too.
Well, and also that there's tasks being done in the process as well. It's not just, hey, look, it's a Unity screen.
Yeah.
It's actually, hey, people are actually doing stuff with this, and that's kind of cool to see.
Yeah, and I found it interesting how many talks I've been watching recently where the presenter hooks up to the projector and, oh, there, boom, pops up Unity. I know there's other distros too, but
I've seen a few
really
other distributions
on.
Popping up. I definitely say Ubuntu's been amongst the most common, but I have seen a couple of KDE doodookies pop up too.
Yep. I'm pretty impressed. So thanks for submitting this. He just went over to Linux Action Show.
And thanks for the robot fix. I got to tell you, I really needed that.
Yeah. He went to linuxactionshow.reddit.com and submitted a little slideshow, which is cool.
Good stuff.
So that's the JSK.
JSK.
You know what? And so when the robots take over,
I'll tell you what, I'll be working for the one that works in the kitchen. I'm good with that.
That is a great idea.
That's
a dinner robot, right?
Head.
So how you feeling? You feeling better?
Feel better. I'm alive. I'm you know, I have a pulse, and you know, and I managed to actually drive here without falling asleep in a ditch. So.
That's good. Yeah. Well, it is beautiful out here in the Pacific Northwest today. So we are we're powering through it. We're actually in the phase right now in the studio where it's actually quite pleasant.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't feel cold or hot. It's comfortable.
No. Give it a couple of weeks and we'll be in the it's super hot in here phase, especially because you know we got the lights and all that.
All
kind of
sweating
stuff.
And crying. Absolutely.
Yeah. But, all right, Matt. Before we get to the Android pick, which I just discovered recently, and I'm liking it quite a bit, and I wanted to pass it on, I want to remind everybody that this week's episode is brought to you by our sponsor, GoDaddy.com.
Woo.
You know, last week, my wife Angela was on the show.
She did so good. I was, like, cheering her on. It's like, this is awesome.
It got a little awkward, though, when it came down to the GoDaddy spot. Because I don't think it's much of a secret. I think a lot of people have probably connected the dots based on my insinuations. That I have a relationship with Danica Patrick. I'll just put it that.
Yep.
And it's been we've been scoring specific deals for the Linux Action Show audience because of that. Well, I'll tell you, if you wouldn't think it would happen, but I tell you, Danica is one tough gal. Last week, Angela threw down, socks Danica right in the chin.
I know.
And you know what fell out? Better savings from GoDaddy.com. That's right. Better savings.
Maybe it was like an apology kind of situation.
Like right out of the pocket.
Yeah.
No, it's like, oh, look, better deals.
Literally
right out of my pockets. Better deals right here for you, Matt. Check it out.
Nice.
If you use the code Linux 249. $249. You get a .com for $2.49.
$2.49?
That's $2.50. That's $2.50 American greenbacks.
That's like less than coffee.
That's unbelievable. So use the code Linux249 when you check out. Look, if you're getting something else, maybe you're getting some hosting, maybe you're getting yourself a cert. I don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to judge, but maybe you're just not getting a .com for some reason. Okay. I don't know why that would be.
Maybe you're just kind of – you're still trying to decide whether you want to make the commitment because of a cost.
I'm not even going to kid. Look, when the price is $2.50 when you use the code Linux249, you really should just get a .com too at that price. But if you're not, use our code GO32OFF2. Get you 32% off your entire order for a first-time order.
Nice.
32% right off the top. GO32OFF2.
Group that to a nice, tight little purchase and just –
bam.
Pull the trigger.
So there you go. Or Linux249 to get a .com for $2.49. And thank you to GoDaddy for the longtime support of the Linux Action Show.
Yeesh.
Thanks to you guys for supporting our sponsor. Mm-hmm. And thanks to Angela for, boom, punching out.
Cartoon pow and all. Love it.
Punching out the deals. You know, she just, that fist, all our entire relationship has always kind of been an obstacle. But boy, sure came in handy this time.
Okay. Anyway, she knocked out the savings. That was a big
thing.
Nothing, right?
I just want to remind everybody, Linux Action Show is live on Sundays at 10 a.m. Pacific over at jblive.tv, which is 1 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. UTC over at jblive.tv for the video and jblive.info for the audio stream. And you get to hang out with us in the chat room and tell us what we're doing. Wrong or right, perhaps.
A little bit of both, whatever, you know.
Let's see if that chat room has an opinion on my Android app pick.
Oh, yes.
It's called SurfStream. And here, I'll load it up here on the good old Note 2 that I got, mm-hmm. Matt. And the thing, here's the thing about SurfStream. It's very simple, and I'll make a disclaimer. It's a 5 megabyte download for some reason. It's
for Wi-Fi, what it does.
Yeah. Well, totes. If you're a little tight on the storage, it's not ideal, but it's
sure, right. Sure.
And all it is an extremely straight-up, simple Icecast Shoutcast streaming client. Mm-hmm. You add the link you want, and you tap it. Now, that seems like, okay, no big deal. Turns out, almost all of the apps, except for Stream Furious, in the Android App Store that do Icecast stuff, have like all these channels pre-built in and all this automatic location discovery.
A lot of stuff that you're maybe not wanting.
Dude, no. Have like
you
want two.
You want to keep it simple.
I've got like I want jblive.fm and a handful of other Icecast streams in here, and that's it. And I want something that buffers okay, and I want just a very simple interface. And see, when I tap it here, it brings up and it opens up the URL, and then if the streamer provider supports it, it'll even display the MP3 art tag stuff in the thing,
yes.
Which is nice. You've got controls right here, super simple to use.
It looks like it's crazy intuitive.
Oh, this is what I love. It's just absolutely totally basic. It just is very pragmatic what you need.
Well, it seems like it's minimalist, but minimalist without like feeling like you've lost out on stuff. I mean, it's the perfect balance.
And the other thing I like about it is it has a sleep timer, which is just a small little thing. Because like some of them, like you have to pay to get the sleep timer.
Right.
And this one's absolutely free and comes with a sleep timer. So then if you're listening to like the jblive.fm stream or something at night before you go to bed, and you don't want to play all night so it doesn't drain your battery or something.
Yeah.
It just, you know, makes
sense.
Turn off after 20 minutes.
I like that.
Very simple.
The functionality.
I just got it on Friday, and I've been playing with it through the weekend. It's called Serve Stream. It's free, and we'll have a link to that. It's in the Play Store.
Sweet stuff. Like it.
All right. Now, I want to talk about an app that is actually extremely practical, very handy for clips that you might have maybe from your cell phone. You know, like I'm shooting videos of my kids all the time, mm-hmm. and the first 30 seconds of the video is me saying, Dylan, say hi to mom. Say hi to mom, Dylan. And then I finally get it, and he says, hi, mom. Right?
It's like most of your videos, just you. Right, I get you.
And so like, I'd like to be able to chop that first part off. Maybe I want to trim the ends and the beginnings. Maybe I want to transcode it from one format to another. Right. Maybe I want to apply a quick color adjustment, but I don't need the overhead of OpenShot or Cadian Live or Lightworks or anything like that.
You need something that's just wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, let me make my trim.
Yeah. And if you're familiar with VDub, I can't remember, I think it's VDub or something like that on Windows, it's even better than that. It's called Shotcut, and it's actually available for Windows, Mac, and Linux if you use one of those operating systems. And it's got a very straightforward, intuitive UI. I thought maybe, Matt, I'd do a little demo here.
Yeah, do
us.
A demo, because I mean, I like the layout. It looks like it's no nonsense.
Yeah, you know what? It is no nonsense. You're right about that. So here you get, here's your starting UI right here with the
Sweet.
Basic guide and tells you the keys to use. It looks a little maybe confusing at first, but watch how simple this is. So let's go say I want to grab maybe this interview here with Adam from the Fedora
there
project at Linux Fest Northwest.
Perfect.
click and drag it right into the UI, and it starts playing right away. And I can say, all right, let's. I can hit I, and it marks my endpoint. So that with that's where the encoding will start. And then I go here, and I know that Noah walks towards the camera, and I don't really need to get that. So right when that guy passes in front of the camera, I say, "We'll end right there." So I hit out, and so now I've clipped the range to that area there.
Oh, slick.
And it's say, you know, I've noticed here that maybe the video is a little on the blue side.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a little bit of blue.
Yeah, so there is the – you can add filters right here, so I can do color grading. Oh, I can go in here and I'll drag it over to the oranges a little bit, you know, and the reds, and then play with this.
And because you got that kind of flow control, it's not as absolute as some of the other alternatives.
Right. Oh, yeah, exactly. You get the different ranges of the high, mids, and lows. And I can you can see there's a whole bunch of different – like I can do white balancing in here and stuff like that. I can crop it in. But let's just say that's what I wanted to go with, right? And say I kind of got it pretty much put together. Well, then over here on the side, I have a ton of really cool export options that will send it out via FFmpeg. So you can see I can do DNxHD, which is a intermediate codec that is put out by a commercial company that's really good. But let's just say maybe I want to post it to YouTube because this is a great interview with the Fedora project. I could say H.264 right here, and I can see it's going to keep the native resolution 1080. And I can choose. I can see it's going to do X264, which is an amazing codec. I can see my bit rate, all that kind of stuff. Maybe I don't need a 2 megabits. Maybe I only need a megabit bit rate.
Right.
I can see my audio is going to be AAC, but I could choose OGG Vorbis. I could choose PCM. I could choose specs. You know, whatever I wanted. But I'm going to use AAC. And what's really cool is you can add it to a list. So then you could do this with say 5 or 6 different videos. Add them all to a batch. And you can also do it. You can apply it real time. But I can just say encode. I tell it where I want it to go to. Let's just put it right here on the desktop, and we'll say, Adam. And I hit enter, and then it adds it over here to the queue, and it starts encoding the video. And it's
that's pretty slick.
That's just going to be as fast as your machine is and with the different effects you are. And there you go. So that's called Shotcut.
So it seems like the real differential, because I'm sure people are thinking, well, don't you already have video editors? And it's like, yes, we have Kdenlive, Live, we have OpenShot. But I think the real differential is the color control and less overhead. Those are kind of the two big
pieces. For me, it's really about I drag the clip in there. Yeah. I cut off the like for this show, for example. Really, we don't edit the inside of the show. We edit the beginning and the ends of each segment, and then we put it all together. I could accomplish that in a lot of ways with this because I don't need the first 30 seconds and I don't need the last 1 minute. Chop those, apply the color correction, hit encode. It's really kind of a nice program, and because it's cross platform too, you can work on it. You know,
well, it definitely makes sense, and I like the fact that it's just wham bam, get her done.
The other thing that's really great about it is it seems to be extremely well integrated with modern FFmpeg. So the format support is absolutely ridiculous. Pretty much any format you can throw at it. So I mean, I'm throwing AVCHD files at it. I'm throwing OGG Vorbis at it. I'm throwing MJPEG.
Little mix and match going on.
Oh, it's ridiculous, Matt. It is absolutely ridiculous. It's a great app. Now I have had, just as a little bit of a disclaimer, I have had issues when I do a batch set of encoding. It'll do the first file and then it just stops.
Oh.
But if I do files individually, it seems to be working under Ubuntu 13.04.
Needs a little work in that space, but overall.
I don't know what that's about. Yeah. I don't know what that's about. But it, man. Okay, so.
And how's speed compared to some of the other apps? I mean, of course, you're on a machine that it almost doesn't matter, but.
Yeah, you know, at that point, it hands all the encoding and stuff off to FFmpeg, and it passes in the command line. It just says there's an option you can give FFmpeg to say detect as many cores as possible and just use your best judgment. I was running some monitoring software. I can't remember.
Whatever the heck it was.
Yeah, what was it? Nmon, I think, on the command line, and watching my cores. And yeah, they're all lit up.
Nice.
X264 is really good at that, too, though.
Cool.
So that's called Shotcut, and it is absolutely free. It's open source, and it's available for your platform of choice. Yeah. If you make the wrong choice, they won't punish you for that.
Gotta love that.
And we'll talk a little bit maybe more about it when we get to Linux Fest Northwest clips. But this was the perfect tool because Noah brought in several SD cards worth of clips from Linux Fest Northwest, and they're all like, you don't need the first 30 seconds or the last 30 seconds.
And you didn't need to run a big full-on video editor to do that. You just need something to just trim, bam, render, done.
Totes.
Yep.
There you go. That's the picks. We'll have links to the picks in the show notes. And if you want to suggest something, submit it to linuxactionshow.reddit.com. That's the show's official subreddit, and we're always checking that for ideas.
Yeesh.
All right, Matt, let's do the news.
Time for the news, and this episode is brought to you by
Ting.com. Friends, Ting.com is my mobile phone service, and it's mobile that makes sense. We've been using Ting now for a couple of months. They came in extremely handy during Linux Fest Northwest.
Big time.
So you remember Alex and Noah, right?
I do remember.
I believe it was Alex. He had a Ting a hotspot device.
Oh, that's right.
And the other guys in the car, their phones were dead. So they were able to use their tablet via Skype via the hotspot to stay in touch with us during the caravan.
I was hearing about that. I was like, whoa.
So, you know, people walked up to me. They're like, hey, man, so can I see your Note 2? And they're like looking at it like, yeah, that is a big phone. So did you really switch to Ting? Like, yeah, I switched to Ting. It's right here. Exactly. I love Ting.com. Let me tell you why, too. There's a few things I like about Ting. No contracts or early termination fee. Truly and completely contract free. Yeah, buddy. No bundling along for, like, little surprise services. You can also choose through very simple plans between small, large, extra large. In fact, if you're watching the video version, check out my dashboard for the beginning of the month here. It makes it so simple. I can keep an eye on how much data I'm using, so I know if I need to bump it up. And it's no big deal. If I go over, they'll just charge me for what I use. And if I don't use what I think I'm going to use, they credit me on unused service. Look, right now, my billing cycle, $15 for this billing cycle. That's all I'm
crazy.
Paying. Love it. And look at this, Matt. Ting recently added the new HTC One.
Yeah, we were just talking about this a minute ago.
Oh, I want this phone.
He wants this phone so bad.
Oh, I want this phone so bad. You know, I think Ting is the way of the future with no overage penalties, no add-on charges, unlimited phones, flat $6 a month. And check this out. If you have a problem, you just call them. If you call them between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern, you get an actual human. They pick up. A human picks up.
A real live living person
picks up. A real person. Call them. Try it. 1-855-TING-FTW and see if somebody answers. Now, what I love about that is I'm adding my mom to Ting, and with the other guys, because she never wants to talk to the phone company, here's how it goes. Hi, honey. I'm having a problem with my phone, and I was wondering if... Now I just say, Mom, call Ting. They answer the phone.
So you don't need to worry about it. Yeah. That's great.
So thank you to Ting.com. Go to last.ting.com. You'll save $25 off your first device, like maybe that beautiful HTC One. Oh, look at the HTC One. It has metal.
Well, you're like that guy in the other screen, you know, cuddling his phone.
And, you know, if you want to try out their bring your own device, BYBOSMRT, I don't know.
Whatever.
Go to last.ting.com and you'll just get $25 off your service. And when you look at the Ting prices, that's a pretty good chunk of your bill.
Very good. And the fact that you can control your bill like that, that's so attractive.
I dial it to exactly what I'm using that month. I turned it up for Linux Fest Northwest. Now that I'm done with that shenanigans, I've turned it back down.
Exactly.
I love it. And with no contracts to worry about, is no app, no problem.
No problems.
So thanks to Ting.com for sponsoring Linux Action Show. Go to last.ting.com, you guys, and say thanks to them for sponsoring
Big thanks.
Now, congrats for our first news story. Ladies and gentlemen, our top story this week. Debian 7.0. Wheezy has been released on this weekend, May 4th, Saturday. Brought to us from the great graybeards of the Debian project is the new Wheezy release, rocking such advanced features as Linux 3.2, Apache 2.2, Samba 3.6. You know, everybody knows. We joke.
We're teasing.
Everybody knows that Debian is sort of that when they freeze it, it's a no surprises distro.
That's true.
There you go.
Exactly. It's like a bowl of bran. You know it's going to keep your system clean, and you're going to.
It's been ages since I've shared the story on the Linux Action Show, Matt. Mm-hmm. It's a little story time here on the show. So my first was Debian. Now, a lot of people think my first was Mandrake. Professionally, my first was Mandrake. That was the one I first went out on a limb. I went out there and I said, I'm going to deploy a Mandrake server.
Right.
But it actually, my first initial hands-on with Linux, the very first time, I was in high school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it was my junior or senior year. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft was up and coming, and they were getting big into schools, and this was like Windows 95 time. We had alumni from our school that wanted to pilot training programs in high schools to kind of make you a Microsoft drone in school.
Oh, wow. So they're indoctrinating early there.
Microsoft. Yeah. So you get the Microsoft curriculum books, and then you would take the Microsoft test, and then you'd actually be certified as a Microsoft certified professional while you're in high school. Kind of give you an idea of the program.
Those are like bloodletting and dancing and whatnot.
So it was all based around NT4 and because NT was cool. And we were building a router to segment off a high school network. And we had this problem where we were in kind of a jam because it was really significant network traffic and we needed to isolate things out.
Sure.
And at the time, Windows NT5 was in beta. It hadn't been named Windows 2000 yet. It was still called NT5. And we were part of what they call the Rapid Deployment Program because we were this curriculum. So we were all getting Windows 5, NT5.
Cutting the bleeding edge stuff, right.
And Microsoft want this is how Microsoft was back in the day. They gave us NT5 and said, all right, you need a router. We want you to deploy Windows NT5 and report back to us. And we said, we don't know about putting a beta product. Yeah, what about – and we said, can we compromise? Can we go NT4 and Microsoft proxy services? No. Go Windows – goes NT5. Well, this is a true story. They had just recently implemented the CD key or upgraded the CD functionality on that beta of NT5.
Right.
And the CD key didn't work.
Oh, we could, shocker, right?
We couldn't get Windows installed because the CD key functionality wasn't working. It was broken in that build. We were getting daily builds on disks. We would get boxes full of disks. And so we said, well, we got this Debian ISO we downloaded.
Yeah, right.
And we had an old teacher there who was a Unix guy from back in the day, and we thought, pretty sure that doesn't need a key.
No.
So this was literally like the level of understanding we had. Like, I don't think you have to have a key to install this Debian thing, and I think they have a router software on there. And so we took that same box and installed Debian. And then the next year, Microsoft pulled their curriculum and their courseware. It was a really big deal. They were really pissed. They did not want a Linux box. And the thing was, is the Linux box was working so well. Then we tossed on Squid when we started figuring stuff out.
Right.
And like we're like, wait a minute, we're saving bandwidth? Where things are faster? This is incredible. No way we're pulling this thing out. No way we're getting rid of the Squid box. And so Microsoft said, no, you got to get rid of it. You got to pull it out. No, we're not going to do it. And they stood the ground. Amazingly, the IT department stood their ground and and then Microsoft the next year pulled out. And that was my early indoctrination to Linux and Microsoft. And that was sort of what aligned some of my my belief systems earlier on. And Debian was just this rock, man. It just that box ran. We later on tried Red Hat and all this kind of stuff. But that Debian box ran forever. And that's what you want in a Debian box. You want to throw it on a system that, you know, just runs and runs like a workhorse forever. And you always know there's a future Debian coming out. You know there's an upgrade path available to you, but you know it's going to be a while.
You know it's stable. You know exactly where it's going to be in a year, 5 years, 10 years. Whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You know that something there's going to be updates available as they're needed, not because they're willy nilly.
The other thing is there's not that component where there's a strong commercial interest that drives the project.
Right.
You know, a lot of the other major server deployed distros.
Actually.
Yeah, there's somebody. Either be Novell or Red Hat or Canonical. There's somebody driving.
Now that's not to say there aren't commercial interests contributing to Debian, but that's not their focus.
If
you can want to contribute, great, but that's not going to change their focus.
Yeah,
that's cool.
So Debian's truly one of the great distributions of Linux. I mean, and look where so many of the other distros built on top of Debian are now.
It's true.
So
good stuff.
Happy release day.
Good
to
story
to the Debian folks. And I go way back. That was at most back then Debian 3.
Well, I think that also gives you griping rights. So if they did do something you disagreed with, you've paid your dues.
When was Debian 3.0 Woody released? I remember it was called Woody. Here we go. Let's see here. Debian 3.0 in June. Oh, no. So it was way older than that because I'm an old man.
93?
So, yeah. So it would have been mid to late 90s. I don't know. It was early days. It was very early. Debian was a new thing.
Yeah, right.
God, I'm old. I didn't realize I was Debian old. No, boy, when you realize you're Debian old, that means you're old. Jeez. All right, well, let's talk about something that's really exciting, especially from somebody who's Debian old watching this. Valve releases Portal and Left 4 Dead betas for Linux.
Nice. Dun, dun,
dun. Now, Portal 1 is amazing. Mm-hmm. It's a puzzler. It is so fun. It is very smart. You probably know all about it. And Left 4 Dead, one of the best zombie
shooters.
That's
cool. I was digging that.
I was thinking maybe, I know this is... majority of you out there are audio podcasters, and so this is like very bad form, but you guys have to appreciate this is sort of a moment,
right?
That we
and
actually have
sensitive to motion or anything like that, may take a
or zombie killing,
or zombie
I'm gonna kill zombies just for like 30 seconds on the show. I want to underscore this point though. I just had a weekend in the Linux future, man. I was editing and compiling videos together all weekend. And then when I took a break, I started playing Left 4 Dead. Like, I started playing one of the coolest zombie killers out there right now. And
it was a good experience, right?
Like, I'm like, Am I living in the really in the world where like I can play Left 4 Dead and video edit
and games you didn't settle for? These are games you actually sought out and want to play. I think that's the interesting contrast to say maybe a year or two ago.
Look at that dang thing!
It's crazy.
Matt. I have the
oh that's cool
the Steam. Well, we'll just roll with it. See the little pop up thing right there.
We'll roll with it.
Actually, this is something to note. Is I've been pretty impressed. Is how good the Left 4 Dead game just kind of integrates in. So like, look, I can just sit here and I can multitask while Left 4 Dead's running in the background.
That's cool.
And look, you can see it there. It is,
it's
and I can comes right up. I mean, so I'm having this little overlay of the 50% off Duke Nukem 3D thing. That's what I was trying to get rid of. But anyways, here let's.
I've had that happen in all sorts of operating systems, so it's not a big deal.
Yeah, I suppose not. So one of the things I like about Left 4 Dead, if you guys are kind of new to it, is it is an awesome co-op game. If you've got a buddy who likes to shoot zombies, this is going to be some of the most fun you'll have. But you've also got other options, including playing against people online or just stay alive as long as possible.
Sure.
And do yourself a favor if you're a wuss.
Yeah,
like
start
me.
Out easy. Don't get cocky. Ease your way into a more difficult game as you go, I think.
Let's go to a mall this time, Matt. And
all right.
We'll start
doing a little shopping.
Yeah. All right. So this is good quality entertainment, Matt.
Yes.
I don't remember.
Prices aren't the only thing getting slashed.
That's chat room, awesome. What is the price? Chat room, what is the price for Left 4 Dead? Because I already had it. So this is the cool thing, man. If you bought these for the other platforms, when they come available. Here we go. You can
got
the headphones
if
you want.
Got some shotguns there. There we go.
You think I should go get a shotgun, Matt?
I think you should get a shotgun.
Okay, I'll get a shotgun.
There we go. Oh, there it is.
Oh, that's not a shotgun. That's
there it is.
Is that the shotgun?
Yeah, you got it. Yep, you got a shotty.
Right. I wish I could.
Naughty with a shotty.
I wish I could dual shotgun it. That would be cool.
That would be cool. One.
So what we're watching right here, this is Left 4 Dead. It's set to maximum settings, and then also it's of course mirroring to the Wirecast machine over there. But you can see it still looks really good. It plays great.
And we're just playing single player here, I believe.
Yeah, I'm playing just like a little quick mash 'em up, but it is awesome co-op. Oh, you can hear him coming.
Oh wow! Yeah, you got the headphones on. You really hear it. It's like it's totally.
Where are they? Oh my gosh! Here they come!
Oh gosh!
Oh no! I'm already down now.
You're gonna get spanked.
I'm horrible at this game.
You're gonna get spanked.
Where are you?
You just need teammates.
I know. There's nobody here to help me, so I'm just gonna get.
Much obliged.
Much obliged.
Yeah.
Right, come on, zombie. Where are you going? Right. See how afraid of him?
Yeah, you got a shotgun now.
I'm gonna heal myself up while he runs away. I'll take advantage of that. See, I'm a strategic
first aid kit around your armpit.
Oh no! All right. Okay, there we go. Okay, all right. So once I get this guy, we'll call it. There we go. I got him. So I feel good. See, the mall's really creepy because it's dark. So you can see. There you go. That kind of gives you an idea.
That was a mannequin there. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think he's gonna hurt you.
Up to the escalator.
Oh, there's one. Oh, wow.
Yeah, all right. So there you go. So go get Left 4 Dead if you haven't tried it yet. It's out for Linux, and it's here. It's a real, genuine, big... It's a big old genuine Linux game, and it is fun.
Man, that's gorgeous.
It is good times to kill zombies, and really, the fun is in the multiplayer. Yeah, because that was just...
Definitely. Oh, yeah, you get some buddies on that, and you could just have a ball.
Yeah.
Totally. And you said something about we have a server, I believe.
Is there a Left 4 Dead server? I don't know. What it is there's a Jupiter Broadcasting group on Steam. And
that could be fun. Maybe arrange... A setup there.
Yeah, and Left 4 Dead, when you're doing multiplayer game matching in the game, it will support your Steam groups.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, so go check out Portal. Neat. Go check out Left 4 Dead. And Linux just feels so all grown up.
I know. It's like it's just really coming along.
I'm
that's
editing
awesome.
Video. I'm playing video games. It's unbelievable.
Good stuff.
And, you know, at Linux Fest, we're hooking up HDMI to this thing. And it's just like it's not even a problem anymore.
You're not having to configure everything to death.
Matt, something you and I are fans of, and we talked a little bit about it when we did our OpenSUSE 12.3 review, is the OpenSUSE build service.
Oh, yes.
This is a really, really cool platform that the OpenSUSE folks are creating, and they just announced a new version 2.4.
Woohoo!
Check out what it adds, Matt. The biggest new feature
That's
is
crazy.
Distributed package build service is in the distributed package build service is the package build format. From Arch.
That's so you'll now wild.
Build, you're going to be able to build Arch packages along with RPMs and devs. So you'll upload your TAR-GZ, and you can also do 64-bit ARM versions of these things. And I can even do packages that need the UEFI signing.
That's so cool. That's so cool because, I mean, it allows you to literally just do it.
And this is something that might help with package compatibility and getting, you know, making sure things run right. So the new version of the Open Build Service also implements a build constraint system, allowing users to specify requirements for build hosts when building their packages. Users can define a minimum kernel version, specific CPU flags, or the memory and disk sizes of the worker node executing the build job.
That's handy.
Yeah, yeah. Fab's got a good write-up over on the H Online, and then Mucketware also has a good write-up about the also massive speed improvements the OpenSUSE build service has. So we're now at the point where there are packages on the build service being built for Fedora, Ubuntu, Arch, obviously SUSE.
Sure.
All of these different projects are moving over to the build service, and they're sort of creating this distro package builder in the sky that sort of is going to maybe start to take care of this complaint we have where, like, there's different package formats for different distributions.
I got it for Ubuntu, but I don't have it for OpenSUSE, or I have it for OpenSUSE. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and they're just kind of putting an abstraction layer on top of that, and it kind of makes sense. That's how you do it. Because
I'm glad they're stepping up to address this rather than waiting for someone else to do it. That's really my thing.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I mean, everybody's got their own idea for the perfect package system, and I just don't think we're going to solve that problem.
No, I don't think so. I think they're providing a really good option that we can all choose to do.
Boom. Bob's your uncle.
Mm-hmm.
A little more good news that makes it feel like Linux is just all growed up. The Lightworks open beta is here.
That's right.
You can, anybody. You don't have to be in the private beta and do the secret rain dance.
Try it out. Exactly. And boy, let me tell you, I had to do a lot of dancing to get in there.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to see a little quick of it? You want to see
it? Check it out.
There it is. I'll load it up right here. Here's Lightworks. And boom. So I had a little workspace I was doing, and it's pretty it's actually working pretty good. Limited support for H.264 and MOV file containers, which you probably don't care about too much. And also some limited export options for AVI. That's not working right now.
Right,
but it's definitely here, and it's definitely.
It's coming along.
I used it all weekend. I'm a little underwhelmed at this point. It needs more things. But we're getting close.
It's getting close. It needs a little love. I mean, it needs both some of the proprietary stuff to be implemented to where you can then go ahead and subscribe to that. That's part of their services. But also just some bug fixes and little things there.
I like where they're going, and I like the fact that we're getting some really good options.
Yeah.
I mean, between
good choices,
Shotcut and Lightworks, I was rocking it this weekend, man.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So we have a link to the beta download in the show notes. You do have to sign up. You have to have a Lightworks account.
That's pretty reasonable, though.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's fine.
We're going to talk a little bit more about Firefox OS in the Linux Fest Northwest interview segment. We talked a little bit about it last week. We had Benjamin on the show, who is an evangelist for the Mozilla project. This is really cool.
This was exciting. I was looking at this, and it's like, this is something I may actually be playing with when I get home.
Yeah, I think it's just a browser add-on, too. It just adds into Firefox, and then you can run the Firefox OS. You got push to device, rotation simulation, basic geolocation simulation, which sounds really cool. And they've got the latest version of the Firefox rendering engine in there. So if you want to try building an HTML5 app.
What a great development tool, and also what a great way to kind of see what all the fuss is about without having to try and get something on a phone.
Well, right, and you think about it's got to be one of the key factors to a platform adoption is how hard it is for the developers to get in and start playing.
Right.
And
can they do it early on, or are they going to have to wait? They can do it now.
Just in terms of, like, you just go grab this, and you start writing HTML5 code.
Simple.
You know, with the other guys, at minimum, you might have to sign up as a developer, maybe pay a little money, download their proprietary SDK. Yeah, it's a totally different it's a totally different philosophy. I think this is awesome, and the fact that here's your pre-requirements, Firefox.
Yeah, I think we can do that. I definitely think we can do some Firefox. Not a problem.
I think because of that, we might start seeing a lot of apps show up.
I find myself reversing on previous stances. Before, I was very gun shy, unimpressed. Having both seen it in person, as well as actually seeing the development tools being this accessible, boy, I'll tell you, it may not actually pull people away from existing ecosystems necessarily, but I'll tell you, people that are still on the fence about getting a smartphone are probably going to give this a very serious look from the end user point of view.
What do you think about, I mean, we covered a story last week that the Geeks Phone guys sold out on the first high-end model.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying is I think people are, and it'd be interesting to know which target people.
How many is a sellout either, though.
Right, and of course, what the audience was. Were they all excited developers? Were they end users? I'm sure they're undoubtedly developers, but that's cool that there's that much interest.
I want to pick your brain. You've watched a lot of projects over the years come and go, and I love me the Geary email client from the Yorbra guys, the same people that make Shotwell, and they did an Indiegogo, which we talked about here on the show, for funding development, and it was $100,000 all one shot.
Right,
money or no, you either make it or you don't. And it didn't do very well.
No,
it got to 50,000.
And there's I have immediate thoughts on that. right off the bat. And my first and biggest thought of it is that at the end of the day, it's an email client. And it's an email client that wants to introduce great features, but it's not going to really address larger factors, such as in the enterprise space, you got people living in Exchange / Outlook space. Doesn't really address that. The features and functionality they're bringing in, they're cool, but the rewards, and this is what they really dropped the ball on, is their rewards weren't compelling.
Well,
but
I've never really funded anything because of the rewards.
But a lot of people do. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying – I mean, I agree with you. Obviously, in this particular instance, you're funding it because you care about the email client. And a lot of people do. But you're competing with games, which the rewards are, quite frankly, centric around that. Where Gary, you're going to get it regardless if you funded it or
not. I think saying 100,000 is too much for an email client is a little hard. You know, it's hard to gauge.
It's too much for an email client based on what was being offered as the end result and or reward, depending on how you want to look at it.
Yobra, whatever they're called.
Yeah.
The Gary folks wrote up a blog post kind of analyzing why they think it didn't do too well. He points out that in the blog post that estimations are Thunderbird has in total cost $18 million to develop.
Probably. I mean, and see, that's my big thing is I know you're not a Thunderbird guy. I run literally everything from two-way calendar syncing, two-way contact syncing, and all my email needs right there in Thunderbird.
I use Thunderbird too. I just use one for one account. And,
sure.
He says that they, you know, a rough estimation, they've probably spent about $380,000 out of pocket on Gary so far.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing he says is one reason why they were hoping 100,000 wasn't too much is because they're not asking anybody for 100,000 directly. They're asking for $10 or $20 each, and then that all adds up in aggregate. I think it's hard to say how much value is, you know, $100,000. Maybe they were going to hire somebody to work on it for a year straight.
Well, and does the community perceive this as an email client that's really solving a problem that really addresses the needs of the user? And I don't think it does.
I think that's a key thing. Is it
wasn't resonating.
You know, he kind of sums it up here at the bottom. He says his theory is lesson learned is people don't like their email clients very much, but not so much that they're willing to pay for a new one. And I see I'm of a different opinion because that's not it at all.
This comes across from someone that's very hurt. I've had failed campaigns. I understand. And I get that. You're hurt because you were passionate about it, you're excited. The community seemed on board, but then when it came to time to put the dollars to the road, it didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I get that. But at the same time, I think that people need to realize that you're asking for people to invest money in something, and what happens is you create an atmosphere of people saying, oh yeah, well, all the other guys will fund it, and then I'll get to reap the reward. That was your problem, because someone else will do it. Well, someone else will throw some money into it, and then I can reap the rewards of that later on once it's successful. That was your issue, not the $100,000, but the fact that someone else can do it. I think that was the big issue, is that there wasn't a compelling – it's not like a video game to where it's like, oh man, as soon as this pops out, I'm frothing at the mouth to get that copy.
Right.
It's an email client, so you don't care.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't mean it's bad. It just means there wasn't really any resonation
there. He goes on to say it's important to understand that the Gary campaign was kind of an experiment. We wanted to know if crowdfunding was a potential route for sustaining open source development. Mm-hmm. Do you think this is a statement that it's
it is, but case by case? You know, I think it depends on if each donator has a personal, I'm getting X for my donation. I'm getting a feature or a functionality for my donation. I'm seeing
a credit in the about box.
I'm really seeing where that money's going, and I'm feeling like I'm getting something almost immediately for it upon development. That's hard to address, and that was not addressed in this case. And I think in most instances, with what I would consider mundane software and email clients certainly fall into that category. I think you're going to have some problems there.
Yeah, it's just not new and exciting anymore, I guess.
No, it's not.
I want my email situation to be better so bad that I was just like, oh, anything that makes it a little bit better.
You know, funny, if they found a way to do this successfully, because I know there are Thunderbird extensions that do this kind of okay, but not really. If they said, hey, by the way, we found a way to absolutely 100% guarantee enterprise exchange compatibility out of the box, no excuses, no nonsense. If you fund this,
yeah, that would sell.
You would have 100 grand, no problem.
Maybe if
no problem at all.
The problem is it probably cost them 100 grand to
license. Oh, it would. That's why it would never have happened. Yeah. But that's the kind of game changing thing. As much as I hate exchange, it's the world we live in. You would have had to do something like that.
I'm sad, and I hope they continue on. I'm sure it's a little bit of a setback for them as the team. I hope they realize that there are people out there. I mean, they made 50,000.
Yeah,
I wish they would have done a. You know, I mean, that's why you do something on Indiegogo, right? Is because you can just capture whatever you make.
Right.
And that, but that's also what I was saying about the rewards. Had the rewards been more personalized, you know, just saying.
We'll see what happens next time. I'm sure this isn't the last time we'll see an open source project go up on a crowdfunding kind of thing, and we'll see what happens.
Well, and OpenShot. Right. OpenShot proved the point.
Yeah, you're right. Well,
here's why you care.
I think being on Kickstarter had an element to that.
Oh, yeah, it did. But I also think the fact that he really did really well promoting it, well, and the why you care factor.
And that
is
an itch that the open source community has had for the, you know, forever. Mm-hmm. For the length of the – since the Linux desktop has existed, we've wanted a really compelling, easy-to-use, fast video editor.
Yeah.
And so – you know, but exactly. There hasn't been that same cry for an email client.
Not for the functionality that was being offered. Really, it was kind of like, can you patch together others? Yeah.
The one point I want to touch on is I still feel like – and especially just average open-source consumers don't appreciate the true cost of – development. And
they don't.
Like, because I get this when I talk about, you know, we accept donations for these shows, and people really have no idea the amount of capital and investment the people that make something put into something until you become somebody that makes something
right.
like that. You really don't know. And so I think when people look at that price and go $100,000, for me, it kind of gets me a little upset because I look at that and go, well, for all I know, that's worth $300,000. I have no idea the amount of hours and effort and work these guys are putting in. Maybe they spend, you know, so much. So I don't like that element of it.
That was going to pay, you know, salaries to pay developers that living in various cost of living situations and very well may have attributed to, like, a very minimal lifestyle. I mean,
exactly.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, because I might be projecting a little bit and thinking, oh, maybe they're, you know, maybe they're just barely making it and just, you know, doing their passion thing. And I wish they could get funding because they deserve it, that kind of thing.
I can, yeah.
And then
I can
it fails, and I look
that,
at it and I go, gosh, you know, this could be a great success story. And here we come now. It's a failure a little bit in a way.
It is. Yeah. I definitely can see the identifiable on that. It's going to be tough. But I think, again, and I'm going to say this, don't give up. If this is it and they've stopped, that's sad. Honestly, that's pathetic. Learn from it. Be an entrepreneur about it. Learn from it. Adapt. Find out what did we miss. Here's a real thought. Take a poll. Why did you choose not to fund? Listen to people. Find a way to make that work and try again. And this time really look at features to, you know, like what feature can you get to those people as soon as that, you know, as soon as they've made their donation and you're ready to release? How can you get people excited about specifics? Not a grand scheme, but very specific granular things. You know,
an archdemon in the chat room says, oh, it's just an email client for F's sake, guys. What are you getting so worked up for? And I think it's like
– but it's a bigger picture. I mean, I mean, to me, my not funding it, frankly, was because it was an email client. Who cares?
But at the same time, like, we all sit here and talk about how, everybody should use open source software. And then when somebody comes along, it's like, all right, I want to dedicate myself to make a fantastic piece of open source desktop software. We're like, oh, you're not good enough. You're not good enough, so I'm sorry.
Well, even more commonly, oh, that's awesome. Let's get all excited about it. I'm going to do my part and share it, which is cool, but that's as far as we go with it.
Yeah.
And I've tried to get better about actually putting my money where my mouth is on certain projects, and I have.
I feel like until that starts happening more, then everybody who says they just want to use I only want to use open source applications, until you're funding that stuff, you just need to shut up.
Well, and I think what's going to have to happen, and I remember on the Webcam Studio project, we had talked about this, is that there needs to be a – this is great. Here's the basic package. Oh, you want those additional functionality features? That's great. We have little metered bounty situations where you want a feature? Here it is. I'm dangling it. Nope. No feature, no money. And if you want access to it, we'll make it available to everybody in a year. But if you want early access to it, pony up some cash.
Well, then we also get in the situation where the chat room says, and I'm just picking on them because I think this is what a lot of common conceptions are.
Sure.
Well, we have Thunderbird. Thunderbird's good enough. And
was my problem.
Well, and I do kind of agree with that statement, but let's be frank. I mean, we really have no idea what Mozilla's long-term intentions are with Thunderbird.
And Thunderbird's not a sexy client by any stretch.
They've already said they're backing off from it.
Right.
And it's vague, and we don't really know. So what we're going to do, where we always end up as an open-source community, is we're just going to milk that until it dies, and then we're going to be all upset that Mozilla killed it, even though we all knew it was happening for years.
Right.
And then we'll be sitting with that anything that's inequality, and then we have to start at that point. And it's going to be 2014, and we're going to have a pathetic email client. But I mean, maybe. I mean, that's just an example of what could happen. Likely, that's not going to be a problem.
It's a
evolution in K-mail and webmail.
Right. And it's a hypothetical.
But it's an example of how we sometimes get locked into these. Well, we've got that. We're fine.
You know, I just think a little more about it.
I think that's definitely a point. But I also say that open source projects historically, at least the ones that really want to not be a hobbyist situation, need to stop acting like a nonprofit. And I'm sorry, I'm just going to put that out there. Stop whining because you didn't get donations and figure out a model that's still very open source centric, but at the same time is offering a value. A two-way value street.
I mean, it's like an open source email client with proprietary plugins. Maybe the exchange. Maybe to get ActiveSync, it's $45.
Yeah, exactly. Or you know, but I'm still say if you want to keep it purely open source, and that's totally doable. That's fine. I will offer sponsored plugins, and they'll be available immediately to those that ponied up the cash. We're not going to DRM or nothing. If people want to steal it and share it, that's their business. But more importantly, we're going to make that available to you guys immediately because you donated to the rest of the public. We'll make that available in a year. Hmm. Well, you know, little incentives. Hmm. I mean, again, people can rip that off, surely. But at the same time, try something new. Stop complaining.
To get people over the hump. Yeah. All right, I'll do it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's kind of like you want it now. Here's how we're going to do it. Here's what's going to happen. You're sponsoring that feature. Kind of like what Ubuntu did with their little slider system, you know, to where what features are more important to you.
I think that could be kind of cool. That could
be cool. But they need to make it more specific. Ubuntu's is kind of
wishy-washy. I will give one – and then we'll get off because I know people are done with this topic. But
we're talking.
One thing that I was a little disappointed is like I wish I could have funded them and said like, by the way, my $25, could you put like 20 of this towards GPG support?
Yeah.
And then like the rest towards HTML mail or whatever.
Right. And to actually apply it that way that would be the biggest issue.
If they could, I would go specifically fund that thing that I want. So I think that could be this. I think more open source projects
to
do this
live. Well, I've seen Simply Memphis used to do that with repos. You know, hey, we've got some really crappy podunk public repos you guys can use, or you can use the elite repos that actually don't suck. And I was a subscriber to that for a long time.
That's a good point, Matt. You know, that's a good
point. Just saying.
And, you know, that could be a good way to sustain features down the road because as a feature gets completed, you remove it off the slider and you add the next feature. And then when that feature reaches funding, then you implement that feature.
Exactly.
That could be interesting.
Even a paid beta testing situation. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to do it, but you kind of get the general
idea. Passionate users in the community like me who really want them to succeed would do that.
Absolutely. Because not only are you participating and you're involved, but you're also, you know, kicking down a few bucks to make sure this thing succeeds.
Invested.
Yeah,
invested.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Matt. Well, that's all the news for this week. Last week, we weren't able to show you some of the clips because Matt had the plague from Linux Fest Northwest. But that's all right. Gave us a chance to break it up into two episodes. And this week, we've got interviews from the floor, from the booth that we weren't able to show you. But before we get to that, I want to thank our segment sponsor, System 76. Now, Matt, let's be honest. You were there. The bonobo was the star of the show.
Everybody kept wanting to see it. They wanted to touch it and play with it. And,
it was
crazy.
It was pretty funny. And the bonobo was a champ. It was great because, you know, when you go to a conference situation, you're hooking up to multiple different types of displays. Yeah. The Wi-Fi can be a disaster. You never know what it's going to be like. The bonobo was a champ. I was able to walk up to a high-definition display they had at our booth.
Yes.
HDMI dangled down, plugged right in. Boom. Bonobo picked it up and started displaying it just right to the TV. Perfect resolution. Looked amazing. And this weekend, as I'm editing video like a machine, the bonobo never let me down. Well, I'm sitting there encoding video, and it's rocking all my cores. 8 cores on this Core i7 built into this laptop. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go read about Bitcoin. So I open up Chrome, and I'm browsing the web, and I'm just reading news while this thing's encoding. You wouldn't even know. Like, I felt no slowdown. This thing is a machine.
And it plays games like nobody's business. It's
nobody's
great.
Business, Matt. Yeah. Nobody's freaking business. Look, System 76 has a bunch of machines, including some fantastic all-in-one desktops, some complete standard desktop systems like the Wild Dog Performance that we have here, and the Leopard Extreme, which we've reviewed before on the show. All of these boxes built, born, if you will, to run Ubuntu. And pretty much any distro you want to throw on there.
Yeah, we both have access to these systems, and I can tell you, it's going to pretty much run anything you throw at it.
You want to put Arch on there? You can put Arch on there.
Absolutely.
You want to put a little Fedora on there? You can put a little Fedora on there.
Tri-boot, quad-boot, whatever you want to boot.
And I just want to give a tip of the hat. The day that Ubuntu 13.04 shipped, System 76 had pages up explaining to people what you need to do. Yes, your machine is supported. Yes, this works. Ready to go. And I love that because a lot of the other – well, actually every other vendor every other vendor out there is still shipping older versions of Ubuntu. Yeah. They're afraid of the new release. They don't know how it's going to work. They're not sure what the support situation should be. They don't know what the compatibility status is. They're continuing to investigate it. And then they'll release updates supposedly. Exactly. But you don't know. System 76, the day it came out. You know why they can do that? Because they are involved in the community. They are part of the community. They are just as passionate about this stuff as you are, and that's why you want a System76 machine. Tell them the Linux Action Show sent you.
Definitely.
Go get yourself something
good
nice.
Stuff.
Speaking of Fedora, Noah ran the floor for Linux Fest Northwest along with Alex running the camera, and they got a bunch of great reviews. And the first one, interviews, I should say, the first one was with a representative from the Fedora project.
Tell me a little bit about... I just noticed you guys have a Fedora. That's awesome.
That's my Fedora.
Can you tell me a little bit about what the Fedora, I guess, aim is, or your project goals are, and where Fedora is today and where you're planning on going?
I like to think of Fedora as being a sort of prototype Linux distribution. A lot of people think of it as being a testbed for Red Hat, but it's not exactly that. It's more like we try and come up with the basic design of where Linux is going to go in the future. So a lot of things that are maintained, you know, a lot of upstream components that are maintained by Red Hat people, all the changes land in Fedora first. So in Fedora, you're kind of getting all the brand new cutting-edge technologies, the new developments, and we try and sort of bash those things into shape. And then not just Red Hat, but other distributions sort of get the benefit of that work. So that's what, and I like to see that Fedora, that's kind of Fedora's nature, and that's not likely to change, but it just kind of moves into new areas as they come along. So we're moving more into cloud things lately because that's interesting. So we're getting OpenShift packaged on Fedora, and it's going to be a sort of interesting, you know, a sandbox, a development environment for, you know, for new technologies that are coming along. That's how we like to see it.
Okay, now you guys are backed by Red Hat. So do you see that being having a significant impact and being very helpful for you guys as a project to have such a huge commercial backer? I mean, they're one of the they have to be one of the largest players in the open source community, right?
Sure. Well, I should say that I can't give you an unbiased answer to that because I work for Red Hat, but obviously Red Hat is great. But no, it's genuinely it's a project like Fedora that's backed by a company has a certain nature to it, and if you took Red Hat away from Fedora, it would have to become a very different project. So a true community project like Debian or something is quite different from a Fedora project which has a commercial sponsor. But in the context of what Fedora is, obviously Red Hat's influence is generally a positive one, and it's, you know, it's Red Hat funds a lot of the development. Red Hat, you know, funds people to come to events like this. So it does have it obviously has a positive impact on the project for sure.
Okay, awesome. Is there anything that you'd like to add for users that to tell them why they should switch to Fedora or why maybe give it a whirl on a VM or something like that?
Like I say, we don't actually encourage everyone in the world to run Fedora. That's the interesting thing about it. But if you're anyone who's involved in, you know, developing for Linux or developing around Linux, or you just want to, you know, see the newest technologies that are coming down the line, Fedora is a great way to do it because we don't sort of put a lot of polish on top of upstream components, but we do make sure that everything basically works, and you can see all the new stuff, all the latest components, all the latest kernel bits, the latest graphics drivers, the latest versions of applications and things. So that's one reason to run it. The other reason, if you're a Red Hat person, you know, if you work on Red Hat and you want to see the next version of things that are coming, Fedora is a great thing to run. And it's, if you're interested in stuff like SE Linux, systemd, all the stuff you read a lot about but you don't have a lot of familiarity with, Fedora is a great place to play with it and get familiar with it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
So I thought, you know, he said a couple of interesting things. First of all, it sounds like Fedora is kind of finding its purpose a little bit when he says, you know, we're not doing it for everybody.
Which is kind of an interesting statement, but, you know, at least he's honest.
And, you know, kind of sounds like they're competing with Arch a little bit.
Yeah, a little
just
bit.
Just a little bit.
A little bit.
Very interesting. Good chat.
Yeah.
How great is Noah?
Huh? Oh, he did a great job.
Good
mic,
too. You guys have no idea how loud that room was.
Oh, it was like being in an airport runway. It was loud.
Adam from the Fedora Project mentioned that Fedora was implementing something new called OpenShift, and that's our next clip.
I'm here with Diane from OpenShift.
Origin, yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit what OpenShift Origin is?
Well, OpenShift Origin is the open source platform as a service that is a project that came out of Red Hat. and it is a polyglot, which means it works with lots of different languages, everything from Python to Java to all the different languages and Ruby and you name it. And we've been working on it for the past 2 years at Red Hat, and it went live as an open source project a year and a half ago, and we just did our first release, so we're really excited about having the 1.0 release ready and live for the Linux Fest here in Northwest.
Awesome. Tell me a little bit about what OpenShift does. Like, why would I use OpenShift? What would I use OpenShift for?
So if you're trying to deploy an application in the cloud, like on Amazon or Rackspace or any of those places, you've got to still build your own stack. You have to install your Apache Tomcat, your whatever your message queuing is. And what Platform as a Service does is it automates all of the pieces and parts of the stack that you need to run your application. And so Platform as a Service does that, and we do that as an open source project, and it runs on Fedora, it runs on RHEL, and it runs on any cloud. So we're really, what we're doing is making it really easy to install a Platform as a Service on any cloud. And we also host it OpenShift online. So if you go to OpenShift.com and you can type in LFNW13 and use that promo code, and you can get in for free and deploy your own applications in the cloud. And it really is, it's all about sort of a DevOps agility thing with application deployment in the cloud.
Awesome. And I'm assuming that website is where potential customers could find you?
Yep. You can always come to redhat.com. But the open source project is actually hosted on openshift.github.io. So if you want to find out anything about the OpenShift open source project, which is called Origin, you can go to GitHub. If you want to try the online, you go to openshift.com. And if you want to find out anything about Red Hat, go to redhat.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it, Diane.
That was so OpenShift sounds like a cool thing they're working on, and it was a good little bit of information there. We have a clip from Ben, who was we chatted with him last week about Firefox OS. This one I'm going to play. It needs a little I think it needs a little guiding, so I'll guide it around. But here, we'll start with this.
The Firefox project. And Benjamin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
That's awesome.
And just for clarification, remember we had him on the show last week, and he isn't with Mozilla, but he is sort of, you know, doing the PR front for the Firefox OS. He actually is employed by Canonical, I believe. So just a point of clarification. We chatted with him last week, too.
Now, I know that you guys at the Firefox Project have a lot of different things going on. I have been a longtime Firefox user. I've been using Firefox since before it was Firefox, when it was actually just the Mozilla browser.
Yep.
Can you tell me a little bit with what's new with Firefox?
Okay, so what I'm showing here today at Linux Fest Northwest is Firefox OS, and it's the new mobile platform by Mozilla for phones and tablets. And basically, it uses open web standards like HTML5, and it's got a Linux base to it. So
that's awesome, and that's going to be competing with like the Android and the iPhones and that.
And definitely, yeah, and stuff like Ubuntu Touch. I think we're right now in a position that we're kind of ahead of the crowd as far as the open source mobile platforms that are out there. There's a lot of popularity behind the Firefox brand, so there's been a lot of interest today, and we've got a great app ecosystem already coming together. All HTML5 apps, it's really great.
And so with all HTML5 apps, what you mean is on a web browser, that anything that runs on a web browser will run on your phone, so people won't have to write apps specific to your phone, they just write apps specific to the web, is that correct?
That's essentially the idea, is to have an open web standard behind your app ecosystem and the phone itself. You can download the entire repository on GitHub and hack on it. It's all out there in the public, so it's really great for developers. You know, a lot of developers are loving to work with open technologies like this.
Now, I want to show, so they talk about a little bit about the development opportunity, but then Noah gets him to actually take, so this is the Geeks phone that's sold out that we were talking about earlier in the news segment.
Oh, right, yes.
And then he gets Ben here to do a little demo of it for us. And now this is a better treat for you guys watching the video version, but
yes,
he does kind of walk through it a little bit, so it'll still work for you audio listeners. Here we go.
So this is Firefox OS at Linux Fest Northwest, and as you guys can see, this is just the operating system. You've got apps like SoundCloud already. We've got a nice marketplace here filled with nice great apps, and there's a lot of cool games right now going on the platform. As you can, just to give you an idea of how fast it is, I'm going to show you the UI here. So as you can see, the platform's fast. It's just as fast as Android. And this is all done with open web standards. So there it is.
And that looks an awful lot more intuitive than Android. It seems like with Android, there's all these hidden menus and all these you know, subsystems that you have to get into to configure. It looks like with what you're showing, you know, it's very simplistic. It's you know, and it looks like a little bit easier and a little bit more intuitive for the user to use.
Yeah, that's the idea, is to just make it an easy experience, an easy open experience even.
There you go.
Thank you so much, Benjamin, for your time. I really
I'm not going to say it's anything that's blowing me away in terms of its ingenuity and newness, if that's a word. But to actually see it and, you know, to look at that and go, that's Linux, that's open standards, that's cool. Mozilla, I like Mozilla.
Well, I think I would go so far as to say, I think to people that are not smartphone users yet or thinking about smartphones, or maybe they're wanting to break away from, say, iOS,
yeah.
But Android's maybe a little more than they really want to deal with, because quite frankly, I've tried that with people and it's not a match for everybody. This might be a really great step for them because it is very easy. I mean, you really can't get lost in it. It's super
simple.
Yeah,
and, you know, it seems like they could have an opportunity to have a super – they could capture like that lower-end smartphone market and then maybe go from there.
I think so.
You know, we don't talk about Linode a lot, but they're big in the VPS space for Linux. And Noah and Alex had a chance to talk with a rep from Linode at Linux Fest Northwest.
My name's Noah. I'm here with Peter from Linode. Now, Peter, you guys run a virtual server hosting company. Is that correct?
We do.
Awesome. Now, I'm a Linode customer. I've been using you guys for a long time. Can you tell me a little bit about exactly what makes Linode different from other virtual hosting companies?
I think our biggest virtue is that we strive for simplicity in everything we do. We want the Linode manager to be simple. We want the experience to be simple. We want the sign-up system to be simple. We want support to be simple. You ask questions, you get somebody that's going to help you right away. We recently streamlined the startup system, the sign-up system, so now you don't even need to put in a credit card. You just throw an email address and a password in there. You're good to go for 4 hours. It lets you try out the system, see what's going on, and from there you can say, hey, this is great. I'm going to spin one up and keep going with this. Or you can say, hey, not my cup of tea, none the worse for the wear, but I think after 4 hours, people are going to say, hey, this is great.
Yeah, and one of the things I've noticed, Linode is compared to a lot of other VPSs, is that your speed is so much higher. Do you have any particular way you accomplish that, or is that a very high priority to Linode?
It is, and we're actually working on that right now. We're rolling out a new generation of hardware and have been for about 2 months now. So we started off with upgrading a network. We've got new hardware rolled out in the field, and over the next few months, we're going to start working on getting customers off the old hardware onto the new hardware, and keeping people current is what it takes to stay fast. We want to keep our resources competitive, which means we need good hardware so we can offer the RAM, the CPU, and the resources the customers need.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. Is there anything you want to let customers know or potential customers know?
We strive for simplicity in everything we do. The Linode Manager, it's point-click. You have a server. We got a couple of new services that are going to be rolling out this year. We're working on a new monitoring product called Longview. It installs on the local machine, and it gives a breakdown of basically everything that's going on there. Per process CPU, per process memory, I/O network, everything you want to know about what goes on inside your machine, it's going to capture that, and we're going to store and render that data for you in nice, beautiful graphs. It works on Linode servers. It works on non-Linode servers. If it runs Linux, Longview will run on it. It's a great product. It's beautiful. It makes the experience that much better. We had simplicity, and it wasn't customizable because there weren't all the buttons you need. You deploy your distro, you get what you need done, and this brings some of the beauty and elegance of actually getting to see what's going on. And it's a one-step install process. When you hit the installer, it gives you a URL. You dump that into the machine itself. It pulls down everything it needs to install, and you have stats up and running in about 90 seconds.
That's awesome. Well, we'll look forward to that. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
This is why you got to show up live, because then you get to debate with the chat room about the length of beard and how many years that beard equals. It's a tradition that they started on the live stream, and it just kind of continued on now. They were saying the Linode guy's about 3 years of beard. I'd say that's probably about right.
Probably so.
All right, well, Matt, we've got one more segment, but it's a little bit off the beaten path. It's more for the open source community, so I thought we covered it in the / Etsy segment. What do you
say? Sounds like a plan.
Should we go?
Let's do it.
All right, that's all the Linux Fest Northwest clips from Linux Fest 2013. It was awesome seeing you guys there.
Awesome.
Huge thanks to the crew that helped us out. Big thanks and shout out to Noah and Alex for getting these clips. But, Matt, we got one more. You ready?
I'm ready.
Let's go. Matt and / Etsy, we're going to do something fun. We're going to have a little interview with the Hacker Public Radio guys,
nice,
who have made a platform for anybody to do a podcast or a show. And I want to say thank you to Untangle for sponsoring the / Etsy segment. You guys know about Untangle, right? These are the firewalls that work flawlessly once you have them installed. You just set it and forget it. You can install a U-Series appliance in your network in less than 10 minutes. Even if you're not that versed in every nuance of network management, or if you are, I've used Untangle with clients where I know I can set something up, get it deployed, and do all the functionality they need, and then I can walk away, and they can use its simple-to-use GUI admin interface. Look, you can go grab Untangle for free. Go over to untangle.com and download their free ISO. And then later on, if you want to kick it up and make it even fancier, you can do add-on services for things like content filtering, network performance monitoring, remote access, live support in case you need to go, you need to kick things up to another step. When you're doing that, use the code LAST20. You'll save 20% off a service package.
Last 20
gets you 20% off an Untangle service package. Go look at Untangle. It's a great example of how a company who understands and loves Linux can make a fantastic product out of it. And it's also just a great way to protect a Windows network.
Absolutely.
Put a Linux box on the edge. Untangle knows that an edge box is important. So go grab yourself an Untangle box and choose the right network edge device. And thank you to Untangle.
Big thanks, guys. Big thanks.
For sponsoring the Etsy segment. Right?
Good stuff.
So Hacker Public Radio, I don't know if you guys are familiar with them, but they make an open source podcasting network, essentially. And as a podcaster, I find this absolutely fascinating. And Noah had a chance to talk with two of the guys from Hacker Public Radio.
We're here with Brian and David from Hacker Public Radio. Good evening, or good afternoon. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good, man.
Yeah, I'm doing great.
Awesome. Can you tell me a little bit about, for somebody that's never maybe heard of Hacker Public Radio, what you guys are and what you guys do?
Well, sure. It's a community-contributed podcast. So the idea is that every Monday through Friday, there's one episode that comes out, MP3 Ogden Speaks. They're given all equal billing, and it's all listener-contributed, every single episode. So if you want to contribute an episode, we make it very easy. You can dial a number, you can upload a file, anything like that. And it can be of any topic of interest to hackers. That is the only requirement. There's no length restriction. There's no censorship, anything like that. And I've done 3 shows myself and helped out on a couple roundtables.
And I've got about 6 or 7 shows. Most of them are centered around Linux Fest Northwest.
Can you guys tell me, for somebody that maybe doesn't understand a little bit of the difference between a hacker and a cracker, what is the difference in, and how do you guys define it, and what do you guys like to see?
Well, honestly, if you're going to ask me the hacker-cracker question, I can tell you I've been both. A hacker is somebody who likes to tinker, who likes to play with things, to explore, see how far the limits are. Cracker is more interested in breaking security, usually for personal gain, usually for nefarious purposes, monetary gain, things like that, extra access, doing something bad with it. Hackers just like to tinker. They like to effectively own their equipment. If you get a phone and you're going to hack on it, you're going to do something so that you can make the phone do something it either wasn't designed to do, or that it was promised, or possibly, but your carrier doesn't let you, or you're doing something with it that not somebody didn't intend, but it's interesting, or it suits your life better, or just because you can.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. If you're going to be a hacker, it's just modifying something. You might be a hacker if you need to, say, get a machine apart a certain way. You just get in there and do it, or take your computer apart, or develop a system to do something you want to do.
How can people get involved or find a little bit more information about Hacker Public Radio?
Well, the best thing to do is go to the website, hackerpublicradio.org. And there's lots of links and information there, and you can view all the archives. We have some here in front of you. I know you can't see that on camera, but yes, thanks, David. Effectively, for here at the booth, you can just scan a QR code and go directly to the link for that episode. But the topics are very varied. You can search. If you want to contribute, if you're a first-time contributor, your show goes out the next day. You jump the queue. It gives people a little boost and incentive. And the idea is that if all of our listeners contributed one show a year, we'd never hurt for content.
Awesome. Is there anything else you want to add or let people know about your organization?
Sure. If you're not really good at audio editing and you're concerned that, like, oh, I have something I want to talk about, but I'm not really good at the technical aspects, there are people who will edit it for you. And that information is available on the website.
And also, you can contribute a show, like Brome said, by calling in to the call-in line. That information's on the website. And people will read your show for you if you don't feel good about doing audio and you want to type it out. There are volunteers available. All you have to do is get your content, your typed content, to the HPR website, and someone will read that for you and put it out. So we have a lot of ways to get a show on, and we're interested in what you have to say.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, gentlemen. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I just thought that was really cool. Just a neat way for, you know, people that don't have hosting and all the facilities available to them to get a show out there. You can go check it out. We'll have links to the Hacker Public Radio guys in the show notes.
Absolutely. Good stuff.
All right, Matt.
Good stuff.
I believe that's all for the Etsy segment. And that brings us to the end of this week's broadcast. But Matt! Before we get out of here, should we read some emails?
Let's read some emails.
All right, first one comes in from Retro, and he wants to take us to task for some sloppy file names. He says, I have a comment on your hard work. Your show titles, you name them via the MP3 tag. But as a geek, you know, and I don't need to explain this to you, that the shows will be played in the order of the file name, but not according to the title within the MP3 tag. What player is he using that doesn't sort by title in the MP3 tag?
You know, I don't know.
Anyway, so the problem is...
No, I'm not clear on that.
Is if you sort it alphabetically, you can see that it doesn't... Then the
it wouldn't work alphabetically. Chronologically. Sure.
Right. You know, I've always tagged it in the concept of an MP3 player, which reads the title tags, but also the track number, because everything's... Mm-hmm. All the order... I always assumed all the sorting would be done via the ID3 track number. But he says he'd like us to try to, name it so that way it's always consistent with episode and name title first, then the actual episode title in the MP3 file name. So, okay. He says besides that, he likes the show and wants to keep the great job from Switzerland. I would like to get people's input on this. So, if you have a strong opinion on how the MP3 file should be titled, some people have brought it up to me. But I'm always open to discussions. I'm just not sure if I... He included a few suggestions, but they include spaces and dashes and colons, and I don't like any of them.
No.
So.
No good.
I'm curious if that bugs people, though. If it does, I'd like to.
It might be interesting to get a dialogue going.
All right. Matt, next email came in from Istvan. Mm. He says, hi, guys. I'm a longtime viewer of Linux Action Show. The other day, I remembered you had an episode, which, by the way, was season 23, episode 2, covering some nice shell scripts. I just wanted to share with you some of my shell scripts, and maybe you thought the Lask community might want to grab them.
Right on.
He's got an ASCII maze generator.
Oh, that's cool.
A Debian font package previewer script. A Game of Life simulator. A logarithmic spiral drawing script. And a Mandelbot set drawing script.
Cool.
Anyways, you can find those downloads. They're all GPL3 at bash.sidenote.hu. Link in the show notes. So that's really neat.
Right on.
I love it when people send in your bash scripts. So I wanted
to share it with everybody. And
get some more bash scripts in here.
Definitely.
I like bash.
A little more bash.
Zek writes in with an idea he wants us to kick around. Mm. Hey, guys. Zek the Penguin again with a question concerning the coming Linux phones. In last week's episode, it was mentioned that the Firefox phone will meet different needs than the Ubuntu Touch.
I think so.
Hopefully. We'll see, right? There are so many distros based on Ubuntu that are tweaked to specific needs. Mm-hmm. Do you see Ubuntu Touch being modified in a similar fashion, a la maybe a Linux Mint phone at some point? The notion is really exciting to think about. What's your take on it?
I don't think yes and no. I mean, is it possible? Certainly, but I don't necessarily think there's enough interest to probably go that far with it. I think that there's enough choice in what people are going to have, because I think people are going to either want to go with the Ubuntu phone, they're going to want to go with Android, they're going to want to go with Firefox. I mean, I think they're probably going to stay within that realm, because you can end up kind of diversifying too much, maybe.
I don't know. Kind of depends on the underlying technology. Even if you're using Qt and HTML5 and it's all kind of abstracted up a little bit, so that way, you know, it doesn't really matter exactly what driver it is or whatever.
Sure.
Then maybe it could work. I think in order for it to be sustainable, you'd have to have a pretty significant hobbyist smartphone device market. Kind of like how anybody can grab a desktop, anybody can grab a laptop and throw Linux on there. You'd need that to sort of be the state of mobile devices too. Anybody can go grab a tablet and just load your own OS.
I suppose, yeah. So I think if we achieve that, then perhaps. But, honestly, I just don't see it happening right. At least not immediately. Perhaps down the road, don't know.
Jesse writes in with something that maybe you've struggled with before. He's having MTP troubles under Mint. Hi, guys. I run Mint. I've been trying to connect my Samsung S3 running CyanogenMod 10.1 to the computer to transfer files using Terminal or PC ManFX or whatever. But no matter what I do to install MTP, I can't seem to get it to work quickly or easily. I know you suggested Android in the past, AirDroid in the past, I'm sorry, but I prefer having it mounted so I can script actions. I look forward to your suggestions and keep up the great work.
Well, I guess the real question is whether or not – is it mounting or mounting at all? If it's not mounting at all, then a couple things. Obviously, check your updates and then, of course, see if there's a PPA for it that you can add in.
Yeah, I was looking at –
And then there's a variation of another completely – I think you mentioned it.
He uses it. Yeah. I'll include a link to it in the show notes, and it's a little device you can install that then mounts. But see, what the problem is this MTP support's being baked in at the file manager level, and he doesn't want to use Nemo or Nautilus. So I don't know if it's going to work like that.
Might not.
But check out, you know, they, well, look, though, they've got it working.
It should
in,
work.
They've got it working in Thunar here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it should work.
So maybe maybe this link I've included in the show notes will work for you.
I think that's a good idea.
Go MTPFS is what it's called.
Give that
and
a whirl.
And it mounts it using GFS, so it might actually show up as a folder that you could then go browse with
theoretically,
or whatever you want.
Give it a whirl anyway, right?
Yeah, actually, it looks like it's using Fuse here. So this might actually look, and then they're
looks like it does everything you need it
look,
to.
Look, they're mounting it to /media/ my Android. So I bet that would do it.
That should do it, then.
All right.
Poker.
Well, there you go, Jesse. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. Thanks for writing in from the UK. Christian writes in. The age-old question. G'day, mates. By the way, he translates. That's hi, guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. G'day.
G'day.
G'day, mate.
I want to ask an Ubuntu question after watching your 1304 review.
I know. I know, he says.
A couple of months ago, I did a fresh install of the latest Ubuntu 12.10 for my desktop/file server. But now I see lots of comments that Ubuntu 12.10 was a bad idea. I've been dabbling in various Linux distros for many years, so not new, but this is my first full Linux box at home. Gotta say, I like it a lot.
Huh.
After much tweaking and poking, it's really not that bad. So my question is, what's the best way to upgrade to Ubuntu 13.04? I.e., should I dist upgrade, or should I do a fresh install? My main concern is with all the software I have installed and the chances of compatibility issues if the dist with the dist upgrade method. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. And he says, by the way, he says, will you please intrigue about Australian Eastern Standard Time? Just for laughs. Well, if I knew what Australian Eastern Time was for 10 o'clock a.m., I would.
I have a clue.
So what do you think, Matt? Should he do a clean install?
I guess it depends. I'm on two schools of thoughts of it. First and foremost, before you do anything of any sort of anything, back up your home directory, because that's where all your really important stuff is, especially for application settings specifically. As far as backing up your applications themselves, there's a couple different approaches. You could, in fact, go ahead and try an upgrade and see if that goes smoothly. I'm not a fan of them. I'd rather do a clean installation. There's both a command line and a GUI method of backing up your software. I'm not a big fan of that either, honestly. You could use Software Center, you can use Synaptic or whatever they call it. I mean, there's a few different ways about it. But
I think it's a little more tricky when you're going cross versions, though.
Yeah, so I'm probably going to say either just do a clean, make a note of the important apps that are important to you, and do what I do and just realize, oh, hey, I really need to install blank. You know, as I go later on.
I'm supposed to say do a clean install. That's what I'm supposed
that's
to say,
do, but,
and that's the appropriate thing. That's the no risk thing to say. This right here, my bonobo, is not a clean install. This is either 12.04 or 12.10, and I have had, over the years, this is one of the things I actually have appreciated about Ubuntu, is I have had several machines. I had one machine that I think I upgraded since Wardy, just on and on and on.
Oh, really?
Just upgrade after upgrade after upgrade. Now, there's cruft, right? Like,
there can be, yeah.
You know, there's stuff that this has on there that I don't need to have installed.
Sure.
So, for me, it's worked fine. Mm-hmm. I just have a pain threshold. When enough stuff doesn't work the right way, then it's a nuke and pave situation.
True.
So I say do Matt's approach, back up, do an upgrade. If it doesn't work, do a fresh.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. Just keep it simple.
I've gotten away with it more than I think I should have, to be honest. And I don't normally recommend upgrades. But I got to say, from my personal experience, I've really never had much of a problem.
And as far as backing up your software to application title specifically, yes, it is possible. Is it ideal? The problem of it is that if you use either the command line or other methods, a lot of times you end up backing up a lot of stuff you may not really need to.
A lot of the standard system
packages
and stuff.
You know, so it's like, I suppose you could, if you're not including PPA stuff, you could use Software Center and actually sync that up. That's actually fairly easy to do. If you go to matthartley.com and look up software backup, just in the search box there, there's a couple of different methods. One in the comments has the command line method. I have a GUI method. You can try that if you want. Personally,
wow. Nice.
You know, yeah. If it's just me, I'm just gonna basically install the apps as I need them. That's usually what I do. So,
all right,
that's just me.
Nice. I like. So last email comes from Martin, and he's a PearOS fan. We never really talk about PearOS.
Yeah.
Says he's a huge fan, watches the show every week. He's got an OpenSUSE 12.2 KDE box.
Nice.
Runs VirtualBox on that to experiment with other distributions of interest. He says I follow a small amount of distributions, just Ubuntu, Linux Mint, PearOS, Xorin OS, OpenSUSE, GNOME.12.3, blah, blah, blah.
Anyway, oh, wow.
Okay. He goes on. I just installed PearOS 7. In my personal opinion, it's slick and polished.
It is.
It's nice. The main developer is clearly putting a lot of work and effort into it. I noticed that he started an Indiegogo campaign. I think he'd appreciate getting a little bit of media attention.
Yeah.
So over at Indiegogo.com, here's Pear Linux, And he's got 44 days going. I say, you know, if you are a PerOS fan, it might be worth checking out. I've never really played with PerOS much. I know some complaints, people say it tries to be the Mac too much, but I think there is actually
there's a market for it. Yeah, my wife could have given a rat's behind about Linux until she actually saw PerOS, and it's like, oh, hey, I like that. And
oh, really?
Yeah, she's like, and it's missing Photoshop, obviously, but outside of that, she's like, oh, this doesn't make me want to scream.
I think my wife liked it. I think my wife would be like, if I was going to move her over to Linux, yeah. I think this would help with that too.
Yeah.
She likes the Mac OS.
So is my wife.
Yeah. And a lot of people like the
iOS. Yeah, the whole thing. They're Mac.
I'm kind of a Mac refugee. Like I kind of rebel against it. So right. I don't really like yearn for that fix. But I could see how somebody does this. But it's not like so overly Mac. Like it's GNOME 3. Like kind of sexed up a little bit. I like it.
It is. Yeah. And it looks like what they're asking for is fairly. What's their
35?
I saw 115. I'm like, that's reasonable. Oh, wait a minute.
They got they got shirts. They got links to your website. They got
so they got rewards.
Page.
Good for them.
Rewards. They got
smart.
They got some good stuff.
Good stuff.
So good for the PerOS guys. Yeah. Let's see if they get somewhere.
Awesome. Yeah. Check it out. Check
we'll
out
have a link
stuff.
To that in the show notes. And then another thing we wanted to give a mention. You guys might remember last week. We talked about how we had a lot of people help us with Linux Fest Northwest.
Yes.
And one of the people that we didn't ask.
No,
nobody
he did this completely.
Albert Westra on Google Plus just was rocking the G Plus community, keeping people updated on what was going on, screenshots, pictures.
Yep.
And he's doing it again. We're doing a call-in episode of Coda Radio tomorrow. By the way, we're doing a call-in episode of Coda Radio tomorrow, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern. And he started a Google Plus event for it and invited people. I mean, he's so awesome, and he's a great member. He's been so great. It's like one of these, like, I realize now, whenever we go to an event like that, we got to have somebody like Albert
doing that.
It's like it's
and
he
he's
created
so
a job for himself, and it's like, oh, now we have to have somebody doing that.
Right.
It was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, literally, there would be a vacuum for us if he wasn't doing this. He's a big help.
So I just wanted to give a special mention. He's also an artist, and he does some really cool drawings. He's got a DeviantArt page, which we'll have linked in the show notes. And he's starting to do commission. Like, he just did a logo for somebody's website, somebody from the Jupiter Colony. And he's just looking to raise funds. And I think he's maybe hit some tough times. And if you have some artwork you want to commission Albert for, go over to the link in the show notes and contact him. And you can take a look at some of his previous stuff. And he did the Jupiter Colony logo for our G Plus page.
And he did a thing of us here recently.
Oh, yeah, a caricature of us, too.
Yeah, that was really actually, it's on my Google.
Look at you with your Google Plusing and stuff.
But no, I'm just saying, totally check that out because he's really good. I mean, the color is good. His depth is good. Everything is very, very tidy.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah, he's been really cool. So, if you want yourself something or if your company needs something for an event,
consider him.
I'm sure he's got fantastic rates. Yeah, see, he was the first to post us getting attacked by Nerf balls. He was right on top of that. And he grabbed some of the interviews for us, which was great, which we ended up needing. It was really cool.
Good stuff.
Go check it out. Yes. Thank you, Albert. And if you guys want to commission something, we'll have a link to that in the show notes.
Absolutely.
Matt, what are you up to this week?
As always, you can find me at datamation.com. Scroll down to Open Source and click on into that. In addition, you can always find me on the Facebook page. That is Matt Hartley Public.
Matt Hartley Public. We have links to that in the show notes, as well as links to my Twitter and Google Plus profiles. Those are great ways if you want to get something to us because, a little more in front of us than email. We also have the subreddit, linuxactionshow.reddit.com. You can join us live 2 a.m. If you're in Australia, East Coast, Australia time, according to the channel.
Wow, 2 a.m.
2 a.m. or 3 a.m.
Yeah. Okay.
Strengths put it in there a few minutes ago. Or you can join us at 10 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern.
Yes.
Wait, 1 Eastern
one
over at jblive.tv.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning this week's episode of the Linux Action Show. We got a great episode planned next week. You're going to want to tune in, especially if you want to replace Dropbox. It's going to be a killer episode.
Huge stuff. Good stuff. You want to check it out.
Big show. See you right back here next week. All right. A unicorn walks into the studio drunk one more damn time. Boom.
Knocking stuff over.
It's time for me to be a boss.
Wow. What a couple tool bags. All right.